This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio, 2092. World of Radio is a listener-supported public service program about communications around the world. Above all, the dynamic medium of international shortwave between the AM and FM bands. This edition recorded June 24th. Antarctica, Australia, Brazil, Canada, Cyprus, Ethiopia, Greenland, Iran, Ireland, Japan, Kashmir, Korea North and South, Myanmar, Nigeria, Peru, Russia, Taiwan, UK, USA, Vanuatu, and the Propagation Outlook. Standard disclaimer, Antarctica non, the midwinter special from BBC World Service we previewed last week, was well heard by many of us who tried, using remote receivers, if necessary, via 4 shortwave frequencies specifically for the occasion, as well as some others already used by the World Service. And some of us recorded the entire thing and archived it, and it's also available on demand from the BBC World Service. Meanwhile, Mike Terry sends a review of the broadcast from the Daily Telegraph, written by Charlotte Runcie. Here are a few excerpts. Ceris Matthews, that's Ceris, presents the program combining music requests from the base residents with messages from their friends and family and a few famous voices. It's available to hear around the world. This year it was more poignant than ever. Listening in the midst of a stuffy, still partially locked down British midsummer, the broadcast was a fresh, snowy breeze. David Attenborough contributed a recording of a blackbird singing in Kew Gardens, sending his own best wishes in the middle of Antarctic midwinter. The good weather is going to come again, he said. Lauren Laverne read Emily Dickinson's poem, The Brain is Wider Than the Sky, and Bill Bailey performed a specially composed song about longing for the bright lights of Antarctica from muggy London. The personal messages, though, were the highlight. Mums, dads, friends, and relatives saying to their loved ones that I hope you're fixing more things than you're breaking. I'm glad I don't have to talk to you about the football. So happy you're doing what you're happy doing. Get that beard trimmed. You continue to inspire us. Ian of the Shortwave Sites IO Group has some information about the second new shortwave broadcast station in Australia, Island 88 FM on 5045 from Macleay Island, southeast of Brisbane, Queensland. He says, I'm not sure what the regular schedule is, but I have heard it from Thursday through the weekend. So keep checking. The power is 250 to 300 watts PEP at the moment. Emails to the station are answered by a technical friend of the owner. Unfortunately, QSLs or EQSLs are unlikely to be developed by the owner. It operates from a home location. I can confirm that the shortwave antennas are still standing at the old Radio Australia Shepparton transmitter site. I don't see any new development work, but there is evidence of abandonment with some graffiti on the Broadcast Australia signage at the front of the property. In the medium wave circle, Welbe Garcia in Brazil says, it's great you are tuning into Brazilian medium wave stations. The legal framework for the extended FM band, 76 to 88 MHz, freed as part of the digital TV dividend, have been approved, and migration plan of all but major medium wave stations has been consolidated. Since last month, medium wave stations based in state capitals and willing to leave medium wave started to simulcast on EFM. I don't have the info, but I believe the simulcast period will last 1 or 2 years, so listeners can replace their receivers. The EFM was created to address the exhausting of the standard 88 to 108 MHz FM band. As we anticipated last week, CFVP Calgary, Alberta, did return to shortwave on Saturday, June 19th, 6030 kHz. David Fogarty says it's back on the air as of 7 a.m. local time. Two engineers from Bell Media, Dale and Jerry, who are also hams, VA6AD and V6QCT, respectively, rebuilt the transmitter partially with ham radio parts and repaired the connection to the antenna with a temporary matching network. He says, I'm hearing it somewhat faintly here in Walla Walla, Washington, but hope perception improves as the day goes on. The temporary matching network means that not all the 100 watts are going into the antenna. Harold Sellers in nearby BC also says the engineer working on CFVP Funny 1060 simulcast tells me it's back on the air as of 9 a.m. local time. There might be some brief interruptions as they continue to work. By the way, Harold Sellers is also the QSL manager. Then this report from Eric Fetters-Walp. Once I saw the word that CFVP was back on, I turned on at 1725 UT and could detect the signal, maybe a hint of audio, from here in Lake Stevens, Washington, near Seattle. I tried again during local daylight before Radio Marti came on and heard no further sign of CFVP. And the following night at 0545 UT, June 20th, I'm hearing the comedy programming breaking through the Cuban jammer noise at times. Happy to have this station back on the air. As soon as I got the word, IGH tuned in remote receivers trying to hear it, knowing there's no way I'd be hearing it direct. At 1545 UT, June 19th, it was barely readable with laughter and mentions of Calgary via the southern Alberta SDR of VE6 ARS at 1550, only S2 or 3. Since then, several people have tried to hear it after 04 UT when Radio Marti signs off, but unfortunately the Cuban jamming does not. It may even be running all night, between 04 and 10 when Radio Marti comes back on. Another chance to hear it before, if you're close enough, midnight UT, when the evening broadcast resumes from Marti. Well, here's another who barely heard it. Greg Hardison in California says, checked in briefly to the Stevensville, Montana SDR around 0610 UT, June 21st. Heard some bits and bytes of CFVP or CKMX's comedy format, with what would natively have been a fair-to-good signal. The problem, of course, was Cuba's obscene grinder jammer, holding forth against nothing, just wiping out what should have been a perfectly listenable regional signal around 3 kilomiles away. I mean, what a load of crap, says Greg Hardison. In the Michigan ARE tips sheet, Larry Russell reports that CHHA Toronto 1610 kHz is running announcements saying they are testing a more powerful signal, and with contact info if interference is experienced. That was on June 15th in the evening, also reported by Jack Amilar on June 16th in the evening. Power increase test announcement in English and Spanish, much of the time received like a local in Michigan, and a phone number to report interference. Well, this is an almost clear channel in North America, 1610 kHz, we hear it easily. I think the increase is only minor from about 6 to 10 kilowatts. More reports this week of CNR1 jammers from China, and something's always wrong at Radio Havana, Cuba. But I'll spare you the details now. They're all in my weekly log report, roundups as published. Cyprus, in Rusty X, a report from the Kolke Radio blogspot, but I'm not sure of the name of the individual. The repeater antennas of Cape Greco, Cyprus, are living their last days. They are planned to be dismantled in the near future, and a natural zone will be created in place of the iron towers. At the beginning of June this year, I was able to visit Cape Greco and take possibly the last photos of the transmitting center. Powerful relaying activities began at the promontory after 1970, when the French government signed an agreement with Cyprus to build a transmission center with giant antennas on the promontory. From there, Radio France International and Radio Canada International were broadcasting to the entire Mediterranean region, and subsequently Transworld Radio, Radio Sawa, and Cyprus's Monte Carlo were broadcast on medium wave for Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. With the cessation of broadcasting of these three stations a couple of years ago, the history of radio broadcasting in Cyprus ended. Today, the Cyprus Broadcasting Corporation broadcasts from Cairo and Turkey can be received on medium waves on the island. It seems the situation in Ethiopia calls for lots of clandestine broadcasting. An obscure one reported recently by Ivo Ivanov is a new program called Radio Oni / Yoni, that's O-N-I-Y-O-N-I, on 15415 via France. It's scheduled 16 to 1630 UT on 15415 in Afan Oromo languages, but it was not on the air Saturday, May 29th. It was heard on the previous day, Friday. Now, a bit later, a report from Arthur Posner, who checked that transmission, and he says it was heard on June 23rd, Wednesday, and 24th, Thursday, signing on at 1600. However, he spells it differently, Radio Oni / Dire Shagar. That's D-I-R-R-E-S-H-A-G-G-A-R. Now, I've seen those words in the name of another station, so I hope they aren't being mixed up. The WTFDA group, Paul Logan in Lisnaskia, Northern Ireland, reports, "Something special here today for about an hour from 13UT. I had KNR programming on 88.5 FM from Greenland. First time I've ever heard that country, nor do I know of anyone else who has picked them up." He couldn't be sure of the location, but he was sure it was KNR since it was in parallel with their web stream. "Rare as hen's teeth," he says, using a 9-element Yagi antenna. A lot of research by him and other members, including William Hepburn in Ontario, led that it is probably Tasiilaq, which is the closest site to him at 1,285 miles. Well, I must point out, as astounding as this reception may seem, that distance is a common single-hop, sporadic e-distance. It helps to be that close to Greenland in Northern Ireland. But that's not all. Paul Logan says, checking files at the end of the opening to Greenland, a station fades up on 90.7 MHz for a few seconds with a RadioCanada.ca email address from EC Musique. I think it's CBRX FM3 in Rivière-du-Loup, Quebec. Now that distance is 2,646 miles, so that's at least double hop sporadic E. Could be triple hop. On and non, I quote from a press release from BBC World Service June 24th, titled "Iran's Escalating Harassment of BBC News Persian Journalists is Discussed at BBC and UN Human Rights Council Virtual Event." For many years, Iran has conducted a campaign of harassment and intimidation toward BBC News Persian journalists and their families in Iran, including death threats towards them, family members in Iran being brought in for interrogation, and threats made of cross-border operations to put BBC journalists in prison, online harassment and gendered attacks on women journalists, and a judiciary-imposed asset freeze on all assets of BBC News Persian staff in Iran. In some cases, family members were deprived of their liberty and held in degrading conditions in order to tell their relatives to stop working for BBC. In the past year, matters have escalated. Journalists and others perceived to be critics of the authorities have been abducted from other countries and returned to Iran to be imprisoned, in at least one case, to face the death penalty. Iran's asset freeze has extended beyond BBC News Persian staff to some other international Persian language outlets. Death threats have been made towards BBC News Persian staff in London, leading to police involvement and protection. Still with Iran and non, here's some better news from the Associated Press, headlined, "U.S. Takes Down Iran-Linked News Sites and Alleges Disinformation." Dateline Dubai, UAE, American authorities seized a range of Iran's state-linked news website domains. They accused of spreading disinfo, the U.S. Justice Department said, a move that appeared to be a far-reaching crackdown on Iranian media amid heightened tensions between the two countries. Justice Department said 33 of these seized websites were used by the Iranian Islamic Radio and Television Union, which was singled out by the U.S. government last October for what officials described as efforts to spread disinformation and sow discord among American voters ahead of the election. The U.S. says that three other seized websites were operated by the Iraqi Shiite paramilitary group Kataib Hezbollah, which more than a decade ago was designated as a foreign terrorist organization. The website domains are owned by U.S. companies, but despite the sanctions, neither the IRTVU nor KH obtained the required licenses from the U.S. government before using the domain names, according to the Justice Department. Press TV, launched in June 2007, is the state-run IRIB's English-language service. Its Iran-based website was not affected. Most of the domains seized appeared to be .net, .com, and .tv. Generic top-level domains, or coming from Tuvalu, but administered by a U.S. company, VeriSign. Via kilohertz, megahertz, and gigantic hertz, World of Radio 2092. A non-commercial service, as is our website, worldofradio.com. Our thanks this week for generous financial support from Gerald T. Pollard in North Carolina, who does so quarterly with the start of each season, via check on a U.S. bank to Glenn Hauser, P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK, 73702. One may also contribute via PayPal, not necessarily in U.S. funds, to WORADIO@yahoo.com. Last week we had news of a new clandestine broadcast for Kashmir, apparently on the air Tuesdays only, but it was heard June 15th between 15 and 15:30 on 15170, nothing the following days, but some of us made a point of listening the next Tuesday, June 22nd at 15 on 15170. Arthur Posner says, Irish songs, green alligators and a unicorn. I was also listening and heard half an hour of Irish songs only. Well, it is, after all, the Irish Radio Relay Service, never mind Kashmir or Italy. It may have been a one-shot the previous week for the Kashmir program. The name of the program they had decided to relay was Sounds Irish. And who knows what will be heard the following Tuesday. An excellent QSL website is run by Konstantin Barsinkov in St. Petersburg, Russia. He posts his latest QSLs with fine illustrations of them, but below that are all his previous ones from the same station. For example, under Japan, a new one, he says after a very long hiatus, two QSL cards arrived, while 14 reports on the recession of programs in different languages for 2020 remain unanswered, two more reports were sent this year. The Swahili service sent a QSL card illustrating fireworks at night for reception via Madagascar last June, and a postcard of the rising sun was added to the envelope. The Korean service QSL card of red apples in the snow was heard in November. According to stamp on the envelope and the postcard, the correspondence was sent by sea mail, but the date of departure from Japan is not shown. He picked these up on June 15th, and his reports had been through the contact web form of the relevant language services on NHK World's website. Well, here is his blog to see these and many others, qsl-review.blogspot.com. Ivo Ivanov, Observer Bulgaria, previews a special broadcast on June 29th. That's Tuesday between 12 and 14 UT, two different frequencies, one in Korean, 11890, and one in Japanese on 11995. These are from Nippon no Kaze and Furosato no Kaze, so we assume this must be dealing with the issue of North Korean abductions of Japanese. I'm finding this under Korea South Non. In the Michigan ARE tip sheet, Liz Cameron comments, I'm driving a Hyundai Elantra for a few days. Do not buy one. It will get you from point A to B, and the suspension is better than my Ford. The radio, however, is the most despicable thing on earth. There's no real volume control. I tuned to a station which is low power and switched to another. The sound went from very quiet to unreasonably loud. There's almost a foot of space between the volume knob and the tuning knob, with all kinds of non-radio stuff in the middle. It's not ergonomic. The AM stations are just noise. For all of the lovely electronic items coming out of South Korea, the Elantra radio needs desperate improvement. Buy American. So there we have some good advice for all of us who choose our cars, depending on the quality of the radios. As mentioned before, we've been anticipating a new clandestine broadcast for Myanmar on 17800. Since MGB, the transmitter site in Madagascar, has registered such a broadcast at 11:30 UT. However, Richard Langley in New Brunswick says, nothing heard from that since 9 June as of 18 June, but still supposedly scheduled daily in HFCC. Another short-lived clandestine, perhaps, or maybe not just yet. And the new Nigerian clandestine we mentioned last week on 9890, Radio Oninira Yoruba, according to registrations, was going to be on the air 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 19 to 23 UT. But it was missing the weekend of June 20th. I wondered if anyone at Wooferton knew why. Dave replies, as of Friday 18th, it's just gone, no longer scheduled for transmission from Wooferton, no word as to why. While Simon Hicks says could be as simple as no funding, but we're looking at quite big political aims, large companies and states. There will be various wishes in there to not get involved. One or more of those entities could have leaned in. Here's some hot DX news. Lucio Otavio Bobrovich in Brazil reports at 2325 UT June 22nd on 6174 kHz. Radio Tawantinsuyo of Peru is back on the air after months. Thanks for the tip, I say. No way I could get it direct with my high line noise level. It's a 1 kilowatt OAX7C. But it was up to S8 on some South American remotes, and it is off frequency measured 6173.91 variable. I was hearing some great Andean music and Spanish announcements, maybe from a live fiesta from midnight 30 UT, June 23rd, but it just went off the air at midnight 53. Later I found a webcast via their Facebook with the same kind of programming, but that was not live. Here's another interesting item from Rusty X, originally in onair.ru. The first sculpture radio station in history is opening in St. Petersburg. The builders have begun to install this station in the cultural center of the Sevkabel port. The architects say the station will receive a signal from the wind and create musical compositions using natural elements. It's named Leti Bit Radio for the State University, where the outstanding physicist and inventor of radio, Alexander Popov, studied. The base of the pedestal is a retro radio receiver. From it, 144 rods rise into the sky, which will resonate with the wind. AI algorithms and pickup technology transform sounds into electronic music that can be listened to live, online radio, or directly from a speaker in the sculpture's plinth. Beware of the website Radio Classics Sunday, but we safely got this article from it June 16th. All listeners suffer from it sometimes. You are scanning the 40-meter band to hear hams from other countries and suddenly hear a fast ticking sound. You naturally wonder what I have to do now. Chances are you're hearing the 29B6, the container radar of the Russian Army. It scans the Russian airspace looking for everything that flies or is fired from enemy directions to Russia to intercept them early and, of course, to respond with a counterattack. Russians even state that the American stealth F-117 fighter jet can be detected with this radar. Even a small drone is detected at great distances. The ticking sound of this radar can appear on any frequency in shortwave and be very disturbing because it sometimes depresses ordinary radio broadcasts. The 29B6's receiving antenna array consists of 144 antenna masts, each 34 meters high, arranged in a 1,300-meter row with a depth of 200 meters. The maximum range is 3,000 kilometers to an altitude of 100 kilometers. The observation sector is 240 degrees. This radar system is very similar to the Duga 3, the Russian woodpecker, from the 1970s and 80s, the new generation of over-the-horizon radar commissioned in December of 2013. This sound can be encountered everywhere between 0 and 30 megahertz. And that was written by René Kohlenbrander of Radio Classic Sunday. Once in a while, Alan Wiener Worldwide says something about WBCQ's stalled purchase of WHRI. On his latest show, he said they're desperately trying to purchase WHRI and it's taking too long, implying due to government delays in approval. And this version by John Carver, who was also listening, Alan mentioned that the sale of WHRI still has not gone through and is being held up by the government. He has no idea why or when it will be resolved. Northpine.com is a useful website for regional radio news. On June 21st, John Ellis writes, Spanish Christian format launches in Nebraska, My Bridge Radio, promising its Spanish language service. Official launch as My Bridge Radio was on June 1st from KMMJ 750 Grand Island and a 104.7 translator, according to its website. The U.S. Census Bureau says about 27% of the population of Hall County, where Grand Island is located, is Hispanic. On his Northeast Radio Watch, June 14th, Scott Feibusch writes, WFME plans return to 1560. It's already been 4 months since family stations flipped the switch to take WFME in New York silent following the $51 million sale of its longtime transmitter site in Maspeth, Queens. We heard from sources in the New York engineering community. Family Radio had two plans for returning to the airwaves in market number one, the purchase of another license in town and eventually a rebuilt 1560 at a different location. With a third of the one-year silent period already ticked away, there's been no sign of the rumored station purchase, which may explain why they filed a request for special temporary authority to put a limited 1560 signal back on the air at reduced power from a surprising location, a long wire antenna from the tower on First Mountain in West Orange, New Jersey. That was family's New York market base of operations from the 1960s until 2013, when they sold what was then their 94.7 to Cumulus. Family never actually sold that 200-foot tower on Mount Pleasant Avenue, also used by WFMU 91.1 as an aux site by several other New York FMs. Hardly an ideal spot for an AM station, awful ground conductivity, but the best option available to get 1560 back on the air. Proposing to use no more than 12.5 kilowatts day and night into a slanted wire extending from a midpoint on the tower to a tuning unit on the roof of the transmitter building. Now some comments by Sean McHenry in Ohio, KB8JNE, prompted by the report that Switzerland was about to shut down VHF-FM. This is sad in many ways. FM and AM are simple reception modes requiring no codec nor licensing fees, a likely economic industry driver, and moving to digital will simply accelerate the pace at which this tech turns over, often needlessly. We went with standard analog transmission of TV signals for a long time in the U.S., and when they did change, they were backward compatible as in color and stereo. Now that we have changed to digital, we have already seen a massive muddling of channel numbers, frequencies, number of channels, with nothing of value on them, mind you, and now a never-ending and more rapid change of tech in the sets. We have our TVs spying on us. Research the Samsung smart TV issues, as well as the rapid change of the actual signals, requiring a faster cycle of obsolescence of these new tech sets. We are already hitting the second wave of all-out digital with a new format, making your 50-inch widescreen ATSC version 1 set you bought last year wasted money in the very near future. In two-way radio, we've had public service and emergency groups switch to digital and interconnected systems. The quality of the voice may be good when the signal makes it intact. When it does not, it's gibberish, often for the duration of the transmission. Local stations are less than 30 miles away from my rural home, yet several channels are unwatchable because they are digital. When they are good, they look beautiful for about 15 seconds at a time. I can guarantee an analog signal would still be watchable. AM and FM transmission methods do not have that issue, as we all know. I much prefer analog for simplicity's sake. I know, nobody asked, but that's my 2 cents. Then again, nobody I know of asked for digital television either, says Sean McHenry. Ron Howard reminds us to keep an ear on Radio Vanuatu, best heard perhaps after 06 UT on the harmonics 7890 and 11835, because there are extremely eventful times happening in Vanuatu. On June 15th, the Speaker of Parliament resigned. On June 18th, the Prime Minister, his deputy, and 16 other MPs lost their seats in Parliament per a Supreme Court ruling. RVS had a lot of coverage of these important goings-on. The propagation outlook from SWPC Boulder, unsettled to active geomagnetic field, July 4th, 12 and 13th, with ANK indices peaking at 12 and 4 or 15 and 4, otherwise mostly 5 and 2 or 8 and 3. Solar flux 78 or 76, dipping to 75, July 4th to 7th. With a standard disclaimer, World of Radio 2092 concludes. Glenn Hauser saying, until the next, best of DX and 73.